Cassie with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. And I am so happy today. It is Halloween, and I have a very special guest here today. But I do want to remind everyone that we are broadcasting from glorious Clearwater, Florida, and I want to say a big shout out to Mayor George Kretikos and to everyone in the city who did such a marvelous job of cleaning things up after Hurricane Irma. You almost see nothing anymore. Everything's been cleaned up, and the city is beautiful, and it is the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. So I hope that everybody will be coming here to Clearwater, Florida, for a wonderful, wonderful Thanksgiving and holiday time. It's going to be beautiful here. Now, I have some special music for a special guest. Ooh, hey. Okay. Okay. Well, Mary Higgins Clark is the queen of suspense, and she's going to be on Joy on Paper in a few weeks. But I have the queen of Halloween cozy mysteries, and that's Carol J. Perry right here in the studio with me. Hi, Carol.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Patsy. Well, and I love the music.
Yes, it's just for you. It's so wonderful to have you here today. You know, of course, I had you booked from last Halloween, the previous Halloween. It's just so exciting. And I hear that you are working on a deadline for which book is it now?
This will be book 7.
Book 7. Can you believe it?
And it's going to be a Christmas background. Kensington, my wonderful publishers, requested that. And the title is Bells, Spells, and Murders.
Well, I love the titles of all of your books. You know, they are so very clever. Like, one of my favorite is Murder Go Round. And again, the covers, I've mentioned this before. I think you have, whoever they found, Kensington is a wonderful publisher, and they found someone to illustrate your covers who is just brilliant.
They are wonderful. I get so many compliments on them, and they never credit this person. He's a mystery to me also, he or she.
Ah.
And sometimes I'll get emails from people wanting to know, and I kind of indicate to the publisher that
mystery.
I'd like to have a name.
There's a mystery
and
book
almost,
in there somewhere.
Almost all mystery books will have cover by.
Yes.
These do not.
Ah, well, you know why? Because I think it's perhaps some very famous artist who...
Moonlighting.
Who's moonlighting. No, who just loves the idea of following through on a theme.
Yep,
because
and he's done all of them.
It is rare that the book covers really do follow a theme so perfectly.
Yep.
Now, Clive Cussler, who was on my program, of course, he said he was really one of the first authors who demanded. He didn't like the covers that they were giving for his books. And he said, no, they're not. They don't reflect the book. They don't make people want to pick it up. And he was adamant, and that was back, you know, in the day, back in the 70s. And he said, you know, I really paid attention to the covers because he had been in advertising. I mean, he was a copywriter in advertising, and he knew the importance of a good cover,
the package.
Yep. And he insisted on it. And you're very lucky because all of the covers, they go together. You can just line them up and it almost tells a story. And that's the beautiful thing about it.
That one particularly, a Romantic Times review did a breakdown of that cover, trying to figure out what was in the book.
Because there are little hints, and I think the illustrator...
And they said, now, the carousel horse is right behind a box marked fragile, and the writer of this review said, now, could there be explosives in there? And they said, and what's the Statue of Liberty mean?
Exactly. Very clever. And what it shows is that the illustrator... Oftentimes, I don't think the illustrators read the books at all. The illustrator is enjoying your books.
I think so.
And, of course, another lovely thing about the cover of Murder Go Round is that it has a blurb from Carolyn Hart.
It does.
Highly original and great fun. And what is better than a blurb from Carolyn Hart.
And may I thank you, Patsy, for introducing me to Carolyn Hart, Carolyn Hart to the books, which she really read and really...
She loves it, and she often mentions you. And I was so thrilled to send her the book because, of course, she sends me lots of books. And her newest book, we will be talking about in the next few weeks because it's a great book, too. And today, you know, while you're here, I'm going to have some little interviews with a few people. And I'm just waiting now to talk to Kitson Jazinka. I hope she's going to be on in a few minutes. And she's from National Geographic Kids. National Geographic Kids, they do fantastic books. And I just love always the quality of the book. So if you're looking for Christmas presents, you cannot go wrong by looking at National Geographic books for children, because one of the things that they are experts at, of course, we all know their photography is always so beautiful, but also the storylines are great. So do we have Kitson on? Hi, Kitson.
Hi.
Hi. Well, I am so happy to welcome you today to talk on Joy on Paper to talk about History's Mysteries. This is a wonderful book for children.
Well, thank you.
Now,
I think so, too.
Well, now, of course, you've been, you do quite a few books for National Geographic, right?
Yeah, I think this is about either, I don't know, 16 or 18 for me with National Geographic Kids books. So lots of fun nonfiction topics.
Well, I have in the studio with me a mystery writer, and I'm going to be talking to her later on. And she writes books about Salem. And So it's Carol J. Perry. Carol, say hi.
Hi.
Okay.
Hi.
And, you know, the wonderful thing, we all love mysteries, and Carol is an expert on cozy mysteries. And tell us some of the interesting things that you discovered when you were working on this book.
So the book is all about kind of investigating and reconstructing fascinating true mysteries of history. And so some of my favorites, like there's D.B. Cooper, who hijacked a plane, mm-hmm. stole a lot of money, and then jumped out of the plane mysteriously and was never seen again, and things like that that the FBI has actually been investigating for the last 45 years. They just this year called off the investigation after all those years, and you know, that was an interesting one. I kind of love the mysteries that are kind of born of the natural world. Like there's some monster related ones, like witnesses who for years have claimed to have seen a monster thing they call Kongomato in the swamps of areas in Africa, countries like Angola and the Congo, where they have eyewitnesses who claim to have seen these things, but what it boils down to, what they're describing, is that it's like a pterodactyl. So what is that thing? Uh-huh. You know, it's kind of scary and freaky and cool.
Now, you didn't volunteer to take off for the Congo and investigate it yourself?
I've actually been to the Congo, believe it or not, and but not for researching this story. But I did a lot of really cool research, mostly just talking to people who were involved in the science of these stories.
Tell us about the lost colony of Roanoke.
So that's a really, really interesting and historic one, where a group of colonists came. They set up a colony in the island of Roanoke, which is actually in North Carolina, and their leader returned to England and was, you know, going to return, but by the time he did, the whole colony had just kind of poof disappeared, and there were some sort of rustic clues left behind, some words left carved into a tree or a post. But to this day, really nobody knows what happened to those people, and there's certainly lots of theories and people investigating the clues left behind. But some people think that they dispersed and maybe you know, facing limited supplies and disease and threats from Native American neighbors. Maybe they split up into groups, and some may have ended up on another island nearby. Others think the whole colony of people might have been wiped out by a famine or a disease or, you know, other awful things like just an outright attack on them. So there's some science, but really nobody knows for sure.
I've always wondered why, when they came to America, both there and the pilgrims, we always hear about them not finding food, but it seems to me that there was lots of food around. There were wild turkeys and there was
fish.
There's stuff, a fish. I don't understand why they were so hungry all the time.
I mean, maybe they just didn't, maybe they weren't, you know, prepared to have to kind of do the hunter-gatherer thing. I don't know.
Maybe they were Londoners. Also, Londoners don't know hunt.
Yeah.
I
just wonder if there were just too many people to feed. You know, not enough people knew. They didn't know how to garden. They didn't know the climate. They didn't have the skills, like, for instance, that the Native Americans did. They knew the area, and they knew how to grow food and survive.
Well, see, that's an interesting mystery that you can do for your next book. Find out why in the world these people couldn't figure out how to garden and how to kill a wild turkey. You know?
Absolutely.
Okay. And while we're at it, let's talk about what happened to the Irish crown jewels. I think that's a fascinating story.
It is a fascinating story. And, you know, not a lot of people know even that there are crown jewels of Ireland, but they were these very beautiful crown jewels, very valuable. And what's interesting is that the clues seem to point towards kind of an inside job. It's a little bit of a whodunit. The jewels went missing from Dublin Castle in 1907. There was a badge and a star made with pink and white diamonds. But really nobody knows what happened to them. But some sort of suspicious details are known, like the fact that the guards didn't report the theft for more than a month, and that the safe in the castle was kept in the library, and a certain person had the keys, that person let the safe go out of his out of his care, and so who knows? Was it like some inside job? But really, nobody knows. They've never been found.
Well, I think that's interesting because, as you said, nobody even knew there were crown jewels over there.
Right. Absolutely, and they're very beautiful. The photographs of them, the diamond and the pink and white diamonds from Brazil, actually.
Okay, well, we'll probably find them. Maybe they're in Brooklyn somewhere where some Irish immigrant came with them.
Maybe.
One day they'll knock down a building there in Brooklyn and they say, oh, my goodness, the crown jewels of Ireland. Right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, that's kind of the way these things go.
Exactly. It's always fun to, of course, there's been so much stuff on Stonehenge, but that's interesting. What I also found was the Sphinx. Well, tell us a little bit about the Sphinx.
So the thing about the Sphinx, again, it's like Stonehenge. The mysteries surrounding it really are related to how it was built, why it was built, and it's pretty amazing that people can visit there and it still exists from even though it's almost 5,000 years old. So the mysteries, really are about who built it, how, and why. And, there's a lot of science that goes on continually about archaeologists trying to understand. But the biggest question is just how would they have moved those blocks? And even if you had a tremendous workforce, really, given the structure of it, just how in the world would it have happened?
Well, I think you had lots of fun writing this book.
I sure did. I tend to be a kind of a question asker, and believe me, in the case of writing this book, there were just endless questions.
And many more questions. And being from National Geographic, it's wonderful because it opens all the doors for you. Every archaeologist wants to talk to you. Every historian wants to talk to you. So you get some inside scoops, I think.
Yeah, and that really is one of my favorite parts of my job, whether it's writing a book or writing a story for the children's magazine, is I get to really kind of pick the brains of some amazing, amazing experts. So, like, I worked on a piece recently. It's not in this book, but it is something related to it in the second book, about a paleoanthropologist who's a woman who studies ancient Ice Age cave art. So just to get to talk to her and answer a million questions, or have her answer a million questions, is really fascinating. Or, like, in the end of this book, the Histories Mysteries book, there's an actual interview that I put together with an archaeologist. And just to hear his firsthand accounts of what it's like to live and work at an archaeological dig and what it's like to hold these priceless artifacts in his hands, getting to hear those stories firsthand and then share them is a pretty magical experience.
Well, I hope that everybody will share this book by getting it for Christmas for all the children in their lives. It's National Geographic Kids Histories Mysteries, and it's written by Kitson Jazinka, right? I pronounced that correctly?
Yep, perfectly.
Okay, well, you did a great job, and of course, as always, the photos in any National Geographic book are perfect, and the fun facts that you put together, and as you said, all the little stories are fascinating, and it's laid out beautifully, and I think you've done a terrific job, Kitson.
Well, I'm so glad you enjoyed it. Thank you.
Okay, and it's available. People can go to National Geographic website themselves.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's available in bookstores, nationalgeographic.com, Amazon, pretty much, you know, anywhere you typically get a book, you should be able to find it.
Okay. Well, Kitson, I think it's just wonderful, and I'm sure that everybody will enjoy this book.
Well, I sure hope so.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining me today on Joy on Paper. And I look forward to talking to you when you're working on a new book, I'm sure.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Bye-bye for now. Bye.
Bye.
Okay. I love National Geographic books. I love when they send them to me. It's so hard. The minute I get one of their books, I just have to stop and read it because the photographs are wonderful. And the stories are wonderful. So, but before we go to a commercial break, I just want to remind everyone that the Tampa Bay Times Festival of Reading is coming up on November 11th, and it is always fantastic. There's free admission and free parking, so you can't go wrong with that. And the two big speakers are going to be Kate DiCamillo, and, of course, Michael Connelly. Michael Connelly is an amazing author, and he's going to be there. And you've participated before in this, but you're not doing it this year.
I can't do it this year because I have other plans for that date before I remembered what the date of the festival was. But remarkably, it's almost always a nice sunny day, and every time I've been.
It is, yes, yeah. You're right.
And I've met some wonderful writers, and one of the things I like about it is meeting some of the local writers that I haven't met before, and then some that I only see once a year. And a number of the writers' groups, I think a writers' group is so important. Edith Maxwell says, if you want to be a writer, find your tribe. And there are so many. There's the Bay Area Professional Writers Guild. Most of us there are nonfiction writers. There's the Pinellas Writers that meets every Saturday. There's Wordsmiths that meets over at the Seminole Library. There are quite a few. And you'll meet people there. If you're interested in being a writer, practically all of those groups are there. And find your tribe.
Exactly. It's a wonderful opportunity to meet and to learn. Both from the speakers, and then when you stop at the individual booths, everybody there is just happy to talk to you about if they've written why they've written, and to share their stories. And absolutely, this is what all writers need, this encouragement to keep going, because then you will be in a position like Carol J. Perry here with a deadline. Isn't it wonderful when you are in such demand, and Kensington, her publisher, is really great, and they give her deadlines. I think it's wonderful.
I have to write 2 books a year. I get 6 months to write a 300-page book. It's good stress.
It is. It's really good stress. So, and of course, your books, two of your books were picked up for their big displays,
yes,
at Barnes & Noble.
Every Barnes & Noble in America, 630 of them, had an end cap with 30 books that they picked from Kensington's Cozy Selection, which is extensive. And two of them were mine.
It is an amazing accomplishment in a really relatively short period of time that you've been doing this.
My first Kensington book was published in 2014.
I know. Look, I have to take a commercial break, and then I'll be right back, and I've got another guest coming up, and we're going to be continuing to talk to Carol J. Perry.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660, or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of My Pillow. My employees and I would like to thank you for making My Pillow possible. Years ago, when I invented My Pillow, I thought I was the only one out there with problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I'd flip-flop all night, or wake up with a sore neck or headache. So that's why I invented My Pillow. You can adjust MyPillow's patented fill to your exact individual needs to help you get to sleep faster and stay there longer to get the quality sleep you need. I back it with my 10-year warranty and my 60-day money-back guarantee. And now to thank you, I'm bringing back my best offer ever. Buy one of my MyPillows and get another one absolutely free.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY. PATZI.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my very special guest in the studio, Carol J. Perry, who has written a wonderful series of books called Witch City Mysteries. And we're going to be talking to her about her books because it is Halloween and they are all based in Salem. And she was born on Halloween Eve, so she is an expert on the subject. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Patsy.
Okay. But first, before I talk to Carol about her books, I'm going to talk to somebody whose book really fantastic. Elaine Adams, is Elaine here?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, Elaine, great. You know, this new book, which is the third and the final, because it's a trilogy after all, about the legends called The Legends of Orkney. And it's based on Norse mythology, which I tell you, this is so funny. I had always sort of put off, for some reason, Norse mythology was not on the top of my list. Well, I studied Latin in school, and so I was always into Greek mythology and Latin mythology. And when I started reading your books, and the first one, which was the first one?
The Red Sun.
Yeah, which is an excellent, excellent book. That was the first time I really started appreciating Norse mythology. And I think you've done a terrific job. And in this new book, which is called The Raven God, That epilogue is so good. It really, if anybody reads that epilogue, they're going to read the rest of the book.
Well, thank you. It was a lot of fun writing it, and it's appropriate for today because it has a lot of witches in it, you know? Happy Halloween.
Well, thank you. And as I said, I have in the studio with me an expert on witches. She writes the Witch City Mysteries, Carol J. Perry. Carol, say hi.
Hi. I'm looking at the cover of your book.
Hey, Carol.
It's just beautiful. It's sort of Maxfield
Parrish.
Thank you
so much. An amazing artist, yeah, that did all the covers.
It's just,
they really
stunning.
Do
that is beautiful packaging. I haven't read your books yet, but I will add it to my to-be-read pile.
She's working right now on a deadline.
Especially if you're a fan of witches, because I found in my research, it is a book based on Norse mythology, but Orkney, is a real place. It's a group of islands off the coast of Scotland, and not only did they have a lot of Norse culture and history and, mythology on the islands there, but they also had a lot of witch folklore. I don't know if you've ever read any of those stories, but they had a lot of stories about witches that were there, and they actually did some trials and executions way back when. But they also had stories about, those standing stones that you read about, how, a circle of stones,
sure,
big standing stones. And they had a story that there were actually witches trapped inside the stones. And that kind of became the basis for my first story in the series.
I like it. It might become a basis for something in the Witch City Mystery series eventually.
There you go. You can call me and we'll put our heads together.
I would love to.
I always love books with maps, and you have a map in the front. And I think that's so appealing to children. Well, I mean, ever since I read Treasure Island as a kid, whenever there's a map at the front of a book, I just love it.
When I do book
signs, really nice,
I give maps.
Yeah, it's really nice to get a sense of the place, and it's hard to keep track of the names sometimes and get a sense of where the characters are going as they travel about in this magical realm. So I think maps are really helpful to kind of keep an idea of where things are and where characters are in relation to each other.
Well, as I was saying, your basis, of course, is the Norse mythology, and with a lot of change, but I think that it certainly opens up people. Young people will really have a sort of new appreciation in general for mythology by reading your books.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing about mythology. A lot of authors have been borrowing it, throughout the ages, borrowing elements from it, and it's really nice to be able to try to stick to the core pieces, keep the core elements, intact, but then adapt them and borrow them for your story. One of my favorite examples is when I did a lot of research into characters and magical objects, and there's a scene where my character he's being attacked, he's on a ship, and he's being attacked by a giant squid, and I thought, wouldn't it be nice, if he had a magical spear? And with all my research, I remember that Odin had a magical spear called the Gungnir spear, and it comes when you call it. So I went back in the story, and I added a space where, my character received this as a gift. So here he is standing on the ship, with this giant squid about to attack, and he can put his hand in the air and call Gungnir, and the spear, appears in his hand. So, it's really great to be able to have, true, real mythology to kind of hang your story on and be able to borrow those elements as you need them into the action.
Well, of course, you are a college professor. Is that what you teach, or do you teach mythology?
No. I was a professor. I was in a business for a long time. I've worn a lot of hats throughout my career, and I was a professor for 5 years, and I really, really enjoyed that time after I left my family business, and it was around that time that I started writing full-time.
Now, tell us about the Battlecasters. How did you come up with the idea?
I don't know if you guys have kids, but I have a son. He's 17 now. But when I set out to write this book for him, and he's the one that asked me to write him a book that he could read, one of the things about my son and a lot of kids out there is, they're constantly playing games on their phone, on their iPads and whatnot. And he was a huge fan of, he loved to read, but he also loved to play games. And so I wanted to kind of combine those two. As you're trying to, as a new author, trying to attract readers to your series, I wanted to give them a gateway, an opportunity to enter into my world in a familiar way for them through a game that would draw them in, allow them to get to know the characters and creatures and magical objects, and have a really kind of fun experience. And at the end of the day, be excited about sitting down to read a book cover to cover. That's my goal as a literacy advocate, is getting more kids to sit down and read. So the game is just an avenue for them to get to know my characters in my book.
Well, of course, reading to you is one of the important things in life. And I know that you're very involved in reading, promoting reading for young people, which is something that I do, because I was reading from the time I was 3 years old, just like Beatrix Potter. You know, she was reading at the age of three. And so I've read so many books. I have 4,000 of them in my house.
Which, oh, my God. So,
some of them I had to move when we just had this hurricane here, and I had to move like 400 out of my living room. So,
oh, my goodness.
Yes, oh, my goodness.
They're like your children. They're so precious.
Exactly. But, you know, reading is so important, and I think what you're doing by really connecting with young people, that's what we need. We need readers. The more that they read, they learn, and it's just, it opens their minds to so much.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, reading is rocket fuel for the imagination. There's no question. You know, you sit down and watch a movie, the director does all the work, the actors, the screen, everything is up there for you. You think about what happens, what takes place when you read a book. The construct of all those images take place inside your head, you know. You are the architect of the world that you see. Every time you read a book, you begin to see those pictures in your head, and they begin to become richer and more involved as you become a better reader and get deeper into text. And, you know, there's no question that reading is the one thing that allows our imagination to really grow. And without an imagination, you know, that, just imagine you didn't have an imagination. You couldn't solve any problem. You couldn't do anything you didn't already know the answer to, because imagination is what allows us to solve complex problems, to see things. You know, you see things that aren't there. You see things that don't even actually exist. And the richer your imagination, the more able you are to, you know, develop new thinking processes as an adult, as a young person growing up. So for me, you know, I had an opportunity to travel all over the world. I traveled with UNICEF and World Vision to third world countries on just about every continent. And really, one thing I took away from that, you know, is if you ask a child in the developing world what they want to be when they grow up, the answer is not subsistence farmer, you know, or goat herder. The answer is almost always teacher. You know, because for these kids, you know, in these remote villages, the teacher had this magical ability that no one else had, and that was the ability to read. And, you know, reading is what allowed them to communicate with the outside world and to take in new information. So, yeah, huge fan, huge literacy advocate.
Now, have you actually been to Orkney? As part of your travels, did you get up there?
I promised my son I would take him there one day. I was in Scotland last year, and from the Isle of Skye, you know, we could actually kind of see, almost see the islands in the distance. So I've talked to a lot of people that have been there. I meet people from Orkney all the time, but I haven't actually physically been there, but I really hope to go there someday.
I've been to Scotland. I think probably standing on the same place you were, that you can see it. And I actually didn't make it there yet. I'm hoping to do the Norway, Sweden, Finland trip one day and see it. But so you did a lot of research into this subject.
You know, absolutely. I think every author, you know, that's delving into a topic like this, you want to make sure fans can be very persnickety. You know, you don't want to get your mythology wrong. And also, like I said, it's just kind of a treasure trove. You get this inventory of ideas in your head. So when you have a character that needs something like a magical spear, you can immediately pull that up in your mind. So, yeah, if you look in my office, I just finished the first book in a new series. I'm writing a new series that's on using Greek mythology. So you can just see stacks of text, you know, and books in my office, and footnotes and highlights and scribbles, you know, of all the notes and information I tried to absorb in Greek mythology. Same thing for Norse mythology, Celtic mythology. I have so many books on mythology, it boggles the mind at times.
Well, I think this is a really fantastic book. I know that the first book, The Red Sun, had been, you know, nominated for lots of awards, and I think you won the bronze medal for independent publishers, right?
You know, I've won a lot of awards. I can't keep track of them all. I've won about 15 awards with this series. I just won an award for the entire series, a gold medal for the entire series itself from the Moving Children's Award. I've won USA Best Book Awards the last 2 years in a row, and just had a lot of fun with it. You know, awards are a great way to recognize the work, but really, you know, for me, the important part is just, you know, the fact that when I talk to kids, it really resonates with them. I get a chance to go out to schools all over the country and talk to kids about reading and share my passion for reading with them and my excitement for the book series, and it's a lot of fun. I haven't yet met a 10- to 12-year-old that didn't have fun reading the book series.
Well, that is a wonderful thing about being a writer, this opportunity to meet your readers. I know, Carol, you enjoy that, don't you?
I do very much, and I like their emails, and I I let Orion, the hero cat of my in my books, write my newsletter now because I don't have time, so the cat writes it. And I hear from people about that. So, yes, I do. And the research, I just like this woman. I like this writer. I'm going to give this, these books to
well, see
Rachel.
There. Now we have...
I like the way her mind works. It's wonderful.
Well, that's a nice compliment coming from Carol. Elaine, when I was... I was reading the book when I always like epilogues, and so I'm reading this epilogue and I'm thinking, oh boy. First of all, it's funny that Baldur, which is of course one of Odin's sons, I named one of my companies Baldur.
Oh, how interesting!
It is. I have four patents, and so I run my patents through a company called Baldur. Which is very funny.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah.
Isn't it?
That was one of Odin's favorite sons.
Exactly. Yeah. But when I was reading it at, you know, this time of the year, and I was thinking, mistletoe. I'm not going to tell anybody about mistletoe, but, you know, once you read this book, for people who don't know any Norse mythology, once they read this book, they'll always be reminded of your book. Isn't that true?
I love it. Well, thanks for that. Yeah.
Well, I think so.
Go ahead.
I think it's just a nice little thing that where something reminds you of you know, sometimes it's a food in a book, which I love to when people talk about food in a book, that forever after when you eat that food, you think of the book, you know?
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. It was a true story. It was a true Norse, story about how Baldur died. His mother had made him invincible.
Exactly.
And the only thing that could hurt him was mistletoe.
I think little things like that are what make people, young people, really will think, okay, I'm learning something here. You expand your mind with reading, and I think that's wonderful. You know, and I think you've done a terrific job.
Oh, I really appreciate you saying
now,
that.
Do you have
a lot of fun to write this series, you know.
Do you have a website that you want people to go to?
I do. Yeah, the website is just my name, elaineadams.com.
And it's A-L-A-N-E. I'm just telling people, A-L-A-N-E, Adams.
Yep.
A-D-A-M-S, if you can't spell it, from the Adams family. And of course, the book is The Raven God. As Carol said, the cover is beautiful. I just love it. Very evocative. And it is available wherever books are sold, Barnes & Noble, on Amazon. And people can go to elaineadams.com website and find out more about you, because you are fascinating. And I want to thank you so much for being on. I know many people said, it's a trilogy. Why is it a trilogy? It's over. But I'm sure you're coming out with something new and great, and I look forward to having you back on again.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me today.
Okay.
Have a good day.
Bye-bye now, Elaine. Bye. Okay. She's nice.
Isn't she?
Isn't she nice?
Fascinating. And I love the research that she... I love research. It's fun. Like in Murder Go Round, book four. There's a lot of Russian history in it. So I researched a Russian witch named Baba Yaga. She was one bad lady. She was a very scary witch. And I loved the research and to throw those things in along with the story. And sometimes, as that magical sword came to her, sometimes something from your long ago reading, from another book, from a teacher. God bless all my teachers.
And it comes back to you, and you...
It comes back, and you can use it. And then you almost say, oh, I wish I had thought of that. And you think, oh, well, I guess I did.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mentioned food because it was funny. I was picking up books to bring in, and because I love Murder Go Round. One, I love it because of the cover and, of course, the blurb. And in the book, you mentioned cinnamon toast, and... You know, because it's a cold morning here in Clearwater for a change, and I don't normally eat cinnamon toast in the morning, but I just had to have a piece of cinnamon toast. It's so funny. And there you have it in your book. And I love your references to food in your book.
You know, the readers seem to like that. And Kensington asked for some of Aunt Ibby's recipes for the back of the books. It wasn't in the first one, but subsequent books we've had recipes, because Aunt Ibby is writing a cookbook in the in the story. The story goes on and on. But actually, you could pick up any one of them, and I do kind of a neat information dump in the front,
well,
so you don't get lost.
I love it. I love details like that in a book. And I think it's a wonderful way to remind readers about you, because if you, you know, I never liked honey. I'm not a honey person. But after A Gentleman in Moscow, whenever I, and now I do every once in a while have honey, because in A Gentleman in Moscow, he talks so beautifully about honey. He makes such a story. He makes honey come alive that now I appreciate honey. And he does the same thing with apples. And it's so funny. While I'm one of these, like, you know, method actor, I'm a method reader. So I tend, if there's something in the book, some food, I eat it. Or, you know, of course, in A Gentleman in Moscow, there was a lot of champagne. And actually, I did get some champagne.
Of course.
And, of course, coffee from a tin cup. And I did drink while I was reading that book. Usually I read early in the morning. I get up early and I usually read at 5 o'clock in the morning. And for A Gentleman in Moscow, I drank my coffee from a tin cup.
I give my characters certain cups. Pete and Lee, my heroine and her detective boyfriend, have a souvenir cup that they bought the first weekend they spent together. They went to the New Hampshire Raceway, so they like that coffee cup, so they use it. And when they go to a restaurant, they have ironstone mugs. And I hadn't realized that I did that until you mentioned it, but I do it.
Well, it's funny. I mean, I think it adds a depth and an interest. And so I love when people do that. And as I said, in this book by Elaine Adams, when she talks about mistletoe, I mean, I had known the story, but that's, you know, years ago, and I had never really been thinking about it. But once the way she writes about it, once you read that, you'll never not think of it when you see mistletoe. So it's fascinating what a writer can do for a reader. Put ideas, give them a deeper understanding of a subject. Mm-hmm. In your case, of course, you are you know a lot about antiques. And so you have, because you were a copywriter for Antique Magazine.
My first job was in the Ropes Memorial Mansion as a guide in Salem, which is where my love for antiques developed, I'm sure. And my second job was across the street from the Ropes Memorial Mansion in the Old Salem Bookshop. What two perfect jobs for me. And I knew I wanted to be a writer even then. But I was a nonfiction writer for a long time. I still really think of myself as a nonfiction writer because I did it for so long. I was a travel writer, and I still do the antiques and collectibles sometimes. And that's where all the research came from, and the love of certain things. And because living in Salem, I still have to look at a map, though, because this one-way streets that weren't there when I was driving around in it. Salem is a magical place. I mean, half the people think the whole town is haunted, which maybe it is. And I'm sure this month, October is just nuts, and Salem is just amazing. And Grave Errors, the fifth book, starts at Halloween in Salem, and the letdown that comes after, and they go into Lee and her students decide to start a celebration for Day of the Dead, which is now.
And we'll explain. Lee Barrett is is the main character, and she has some paranormal ability.
She's a scryer. She sees things in reflective surfaces, which generally I think she didn't want to see. And she has an aunt, Ibby, who raised her.
Oh, I love one of the best characters.
Sophie Ryan, who's one of my favorite mystery writers, she writes the Magical Cat series, wrote to me, and she said, I want Ida B to adopt me. And, of course, Orion the cat. Oh. Orion used to be a witch's cat and is perhaps a witch's familiar, to be respected and maybe feared.
Yes, and when we first met Orion, he was, it was O-R-I-O-N, but Carol realized that actually he had some Irish blood in him.
Yep.
And he is now a proper O apostrophe Ryan. Yep. And, of course, you know, he might know something about those miss. Listen, where are the missing Irish crown jewels?
I thought of that.
My goodness, she's sitting here and she's thinking, oh my gosh, yeah. Missing, not next.
Yeah, you see it.
Somewhere, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, because it's very true
that,
okay, somebody stole these crown jewels from Ireland. Now, where would you go? If you were stealing crown jewels from Ireland, where would you escape to? Would you escape to England? No. Who's going to go to England? You would escape to America. And she said 1907, I believe. Well, everybody was coming. Every Irish person was coming to America in 1907. And where better to land?
I have already hitchhiked onto that idea. And I also like those pillars with witches trapped inside.
Well, you see?
I'm going to use her website and contact her immediately when I leave here.
Look at what I have done. No, you have to contact both of them. You have to contact Elaine Adams, who wrote The Raven God. Yep. And you have to contact this wonderful National Geographic.
Kristen, but that's not quite right. What is it?
Yeah, it's Kitson. Her name is Kitson, which is an unusual name. And she's National Geographic. And she's been with them a long time. And her name is Kitson. And you can find out about her.
I'm sure you have her website.
I have her website somewhere. Mm-hmm. And my goodness, right here. Look.
Oh, yeah.
See, this is what is exciting about a writer. Here, Carol J. Perry came in just to talk about her most current book. But now she's come out with ideas for book number 9, book number 10.
Yeah, and Grave Errors came from when I was at the Pinellas Writers Meeting on a Saturday morning, and one of my fellow writers, Richard Erlinger, had an essay on Day of the Dead. And that, he's in the acknowledgments in here, because that his little essay started my idea for Grave Errors.
So this isn't it wonderful?
Isn't it?
This is the writer's
mind is a strange and wonderful thing.
Absolutely. It is a mystery in and of itself.
It is.
But right here, we've managed, you know, now Kensington will come to you and say, do you have any ideas for,
I do.
I came up with them in about 15 minutes. Yeah. I had two great ideas.
Yeah. I might put them both together.
Who exactly. Knows?
This has been one of the best days here.
That is turning out great. And I just want to again remind everyone that the Tampa Bay Times Festival of Reading is November 11th, and it's going to be lots of fun. And, you know, you can't go right. The location is perfect. It's right downtown on 7th Avenue, right? It's 7th Avenue. And at USF in St. Petersburg, the cost is nothing. And the parking is actually very convenient. The parking is right next, so you don't have a long way to walk. And
there's a little food kiosks around and restaurants nearby. It's a good day.
Yeah, and the lovely thing is you do get to meet authors, and you do get to get some selfies, send them out, and the authors appreciate it. I know that one romance writer I know who was very fortunate that one day, she was at one of these little book fests, and somebody came up and said, you know, could I have a selfie with you? And it turned out that the woman was a former, I'm not sure if she was not quite a general, like a colonel in the army, and she sent out her selfie to all of her friends in the army. You know, many of them serving overseas in Afghanistan and in Iraq. And at the time, there were a big deployment. And in no time, I mean, within weeks, it was viral. Her selfie went viral among the community.
Really?
And all of the women in the army ordered this book. And I mean, it became an instant bestseller among military women. And we're talking thousands and thousands of books. And it came from one selfie. One selfie.
Isn't that wonderful?
So that's, you know, you can do an author such a favor by, you know, getting a selfie and putting it on social media and telling all your friends and everybody who looks at your social media about how wonderful the book is. So now you can't see Carol at this festival because she is so busy. She's putting herself in a hotel room, and she is going to lock herself up until she finishes.
That's right.
deadline December 15th. That's a wonderful thing for an author to have a deadline. But I want to thank you so much, Carol, for coming in. What is your website, by the way?
CarolJPerry.com.
Okay. And you can go there. Carol has delightful little videos about her books. Oh,
trailers. I just ordered one for the next book, for It Takes a Coven. I just ordered my new one.
I love these trailers that you do.
They're beautiful. Von Henry is the name of the company that does it. I think if you just look up Von Henry videos, it would come up. Next time I talk to you, I'll bring their number, too, because they do lovely work.
They do lovely work.
And they're
work.
Local. They're in Clearwater.
And I think that all authors should think about using them because they're really, it's very clever. And when you go to an author's website, you like to see something, some activity there. You haven't posted any little videos of yourself talking yet, have you?
I haven't because I am so, I'm a functional illiterate when it comes to stuff that's online. I have to have my grandchildren
help me.
And there are videos of me.
You know, Rita Moreau, she dresses up as a nun, and she does her little presentations, I think. I don't know if she's put them on her website yet, but I was thinking you could dress up as a witch, you know, a beautiful witch, of course.
Of course, thank you.
And put up a little video of you talking. So there's just so many possibilities for writers.
Maybe I'll have the cat that does my newsletter take a video of me.
It's about time.
Yeah,
exactly.
I'll do that.
Okay. Well, Carol, thank you so much for coming in today. And as I said, Clearwater is just the most wonderful place in the world to be living and to just visit. And if you're in the mood for some gorgeous weather, we have it here for the holidays. It's going to be beautiful in this area. So do come to Clearwater. And as I always say, it's just one of the most wonderful things in the world is to see your words on paper and to hear them in an audible book. And I love audible books now. And all you have to do is start writing. And so try to get inspired this weekend. Do something. Sit down at the computer and start putting it down on paper because you can't fix it until you get it down on paper, right?
That's right.
And half the fun of writing is you finish the book, then you edit it. Right. Okay. And then meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you for everything, Ed. And he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him because he's always so wonderful. And have just absolutely wonderful weekend. Bye-bye now. We'll be right back.